Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. Let's go straight to Olive. 51551. Olive, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? How's
good.
It going?
Good. What age were you when this happened?
I was about 8, I'd say.
And
I know it was after my first communion, because that's what I had the hairband for, and then I was allowed to wear it to school.
Yeah. So you had a plastic hairband in your hair.
Yeah.
And remind people, I don't know how common they are now, but they would have teeth in them or prongs to keep them in your hair. Plastic teeth.
Exactly. And it had little diamondy things on it. Okay. I was very proud of it.
Great.
And of course... go ahead.
No, you tell me what happened.
Oh, I was talking in school and to my friend next to me.
Yeah.
And the teacher, lady teacher, came up behind me and she rapped me on the top of the head with her knuckles.
Okay.
And I had an excruciating pain in my head.
Yeah.
But you didn't say anything, you just shut up talking. Yeah. And I went to the bathroom at lunchtime and took off the hairband, and there were 3 teeth missing off the hairband, and there was blood on it.
Yeah.
So the headache passed, and you wouldn't go home and say, you know, she hit me over the head and I have a pain in my head, because you'd be told if you weren't talking, you wouldn't have been hit in the first place.
Yeah.
So I shut up about it anyway, thought no more about it, and I had kind of a little spot about the size of a pea on my head, you know.
Mm. And Olive, did you think the 3 missing teeth were the plastic teeth? Do you think they were in your hair? Did you try and comb them out? Did you?
No, I just ignored it, because being a child, I put the hairband back on and got on with it, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't make the connection.
Okay.
It was quite some time later when I realised what had happened.
So the,
40 years later.
Oh my God! So the pain was. She must have known you were wearing a hairband.
Oh, I don't know. She just wrapped me on top of the head, like it was a common occurrence. You didn't really give a lot of thought to it, you know.
You're only 7, 8 years of age. How did you manage with the pain of this thing embedded in your head and the sharp enough prongs? Between it happening and by the time you could go to the bathroom on your lunch break. How did you manage that pain?
You just sucked it up, and you wouldn't dream of saying anything, because if you said anything, her weapon of choice was actually the bar of a cot.
Yeah.
That was what she used for a stick. And so you weren't going to complain, or you weren't going to...
Yeah.
You know, unless you physically fainted, I don't think there was anything that anyone would have done for you, you know?
Okay.
So it was literally 40 years later that they became an issue. I left school, went to Dublin, married, settled down, and I was working and living in Rialto.
Yeah.
And I went to get my hair done there on the barn, and the hairdresser handed me a very discreet note.
Yeah.
That said, I'm sorry, I cannot do your hair, as you have a lump on your head. Please see your doctor.
Wow.
And I was mortified, absolutely mortified. I thought, oh my God, you know, it must be that visible, you know.
Yeah. Could you feel the lump with your fingers on?
Yeah, I can still feel it. I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
The GP, my GP was great, and I called into him on the way down.
Yeah.
And I told him my story, and he said to me, did you walk into a door of a press? Did you did something? Did you do it in the garden? How did you do it? And I said, well, the only thing I can ever think happened to my head was that when I was in school, teacher hit me over the head for talking. And I was missing teeth off a hairband. So he gave me an anaesthetic, and he got a scalpel, and he started to root about, and he handed me one of those sterile wipes with 2 plastic teeth on it, perfect pink plastic teeth. And he was furious, absolutely furious. Yeah. He wanted me to do more about it. He was really annoyed about it. Like, I was just stunned, and I thought, okay, fine. And then he said, no, whoa, whoa, whoa. He said, there's another one in there. It's too far down for me to get.
My God.
And he said, it will come up eventually, and you'll have to have it out yourself. So,
And over the 40 years, was it ever evident either? And did you get headaches? Did you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'd hit, sometimes you'd hit off. And, you know, you might hit off.
Yeah.
Or you'd hit the hairbrush off.
And you get a sting or whatever. Yeah.
There, you know?
Yeah.
But it never, apart from the original headache, it never actually caused me any bother. It obviously was scar tissue. It had been buried in my skull. But, yeah, he was a diamond. He got it out anyway.
Yeah.
I passed no further heed on it. And then, sadly, 10 years later, my husband died and I moved back to the rural area near to the school.
Yeah.
And I had always promised myself that if I ever saw that woman, I was going to say to her what she did to me.
Okay.
But I never thought I'd see her again. But like most rural areas, the following Christmas, I was in the town doing the shopping and I went in for a cup of coffee. And lo and behold, there she is, sitting in, having her coffee herself.
Yeah.
And so I went over and I reintroduced myself. And she was delighted to see me and how well I had done and all this. And then she said to me, I said to her, oh, by the way, I said, I have a story for you. I promised if I ever saw you again that I'd tell you.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, really? And when we were in school, if she was annoyed, her nostrils would start to flare, right? Like a racehorse when she was getting really annoyed, right?
Yeah.
So I started to tell her my story the way I'm after telling you. Well, she wasn't a bit happy. And she sat up straight and she was ready now to respond. And my legs started to tremble. And I told her then, and I had my story told, I said, no, you can relax. I said, you needn't worry. I have no intention of suing you or going any further. I said, I just don't even want an apology. I promised myself if I ever saw you, I was going to tell you what you did to me. Mm. And she started to cry. And she said to me, oh, Olive, we hadn't a clue. Right?
Mm.
Now, that was all right. Now that I was an adult, that's like grand to know that you think that you didn't have a clue when you were teaching. But the Department of Education is the people that I blame for this because it's not alone that I was traumatised by what I witnessed happening to other people in primary school.
Yeah.
But take the focus off 400 pupils, 30 teacher schools for a minute. You had small rural schools with two teachers in them.
Yeah.
And you had the priest coming and you had the catechist coming and you had regular inspections and you sang and you danced and you read poetry for them and all the rest of it. And nobody ever asked the children once what was school life for them like them, because I was traumatised by violence. I never came from it. I didn't understand it. The dog wasn't even chastised in our house.
Yeah.
And here I had to stand in line and watch my classmates on a daily basis being slapped and battered and things happened to them. And the fact that this affected me didn't go unnoticed, because it was a long time after the other principal has gone as well. And he asked me at a funeral one day, he said, did you ever notice in school, I used to send you down to my wife with a note.
Yeah.
And did you ever read the note? And I said, no.
Yeah.
I wouldn't dream of it. I said to my mother, he'd kill me if I read it.
Yes, yes.
And he said, no, well, I'll tell you now what was written on it. Can you keep Olive for half an hour because I want to run amok? And he said, I could never hit anyone while you were in the room, because I've blue eyes, which is neither here nor there. But he said, "Your big blue eyes," he said, "are filled with tears. And I couldn't hit anyone." Now, the point being that he found a way around it.
Yeah.
God knows what he did when I wasn't there.
But he said it to you.
He said it to me. That he had on the note to his wife, "Please keep Ollie for half an hour. I want to run amok." But you have to remember now, Joe, that we owe to John Boland for abolishing corporal punishment in 1982.
Yeah, the Minister
of Education. Up to that, they were perfectly within their rights.
I know.
And these people weren't cruel in the sense of you were slapped if you didn't do your homework, you were slapped if you were late, you were slapped if you... God forgive me, the Angelus. I still can't say the Angelus. Because I cannot remember them in the right order. Because coming up to confirmation, you'd be expected to remember that and to have these prayers off by heart. And you'd be slapped if you said it wrong. And you got used to it. That's what I object to now, looking back on it. And I would hope it would never happen to a child. And I would hope if anyone is listening that thinks their child is going through such anxiety.
Yeah.
In order to learn, we were entitled to an education. Excuse me. Yeah. I could read and write before I went to school.
Yeah.
And if you were to ask me, I could not tell you what I learned in primary.
Yeah.
I know what I learned in secondary, all right.
Yeah, a lot of people.
I had a brilliant secondary education.
And by the way, would the master, as you call the principal, who would send you down to his wife because he couldn't beat the children, because he couldn't bear the look on your innocent face as you shed tears, what did he use to beat children?
Oh, he had a piece of blackthorn stick out of the ditch, because if we got rid of the stick, which we did regularly, he'd be gone for the day for something, and we would break it, or we would hide it, or would throw it out.
Well done.
And he knew the boys mostly were responsible.
Yeah.
And you have to remember there was only six people in my class, like four girls and two boys.
Right.
So he would bring them down the road and make them cut the new stick.
And he'd pick out a particular piece of blackthorn, would he?
It was a particular piece of stick. I can see it in front of me. I wonder whatever happened to it, because I could see it in front of me. But there you go. But anyway, the thing is that I was saying to your researcher that she inspired me. I was telling her my story, and she was so appalled at my tooth in my head that she inspired me, and I rang the doctor
to go now
and get that third tooth out.
Okay, and you did that today or yesterday or whatever.
Yeah, today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, Olive, you have a foreign body in your head. You've had it in your head for nearly 60 years, Olive.
I know. And it never dawned on me. That is how inculcated, how completely... we were paralysed by a fear of them.
Yeah.
And once we got out the school gate and got home, we were grand till the next morning, and we went again, you know.
Yeah.
And the good far outweighed the bad. One of the things that I did want to say was, again, it's back to the Department of Education and their educational system. These people weren't monsters. They were managing 40 children in one room at four different grades, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to be firm. I think the idea was to be firm in order to give everyone an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
And.
But also, I was reading at the week. Also, in fairness, Olive, in fairness to you, and in detriment to the department, there were guidelines, even when up to 1982, there were guidelines. And there were guidelines along the protocol of corporal punishment should be used sparingly as a last resort, should normally only be implemented by one teacher in the school, probably the principal. I know it's laughable. There were borders that the department set. But again and again and again last week, when we had brave parents who went straight to the department to complain about their seven-year-old being beaten senseless, the department sent everything back to the school. and said, no, you have to go to the school manager, who was invariably the parish priest. I'll have stay with us, because I'm just wondering, if I had a foreign, but you have, can you feel it there now?
Yes, Joe, I can. Will I send it to you? I'll get it out during the week. And I'll...
Stop. Will you stop? I don't know. What is the procedure? How do you... Your GP, and I think I know the GP you're talking about. He's a great, great
Kelly,
man.
Right, Kelly. Yeah.
Great man.
Diamond.
And you can... But I've just wondered, given that it's been embedded, a piece of foreign body embedded in your head for 60 years, what would you have to do to get it out? The GP tried. But anyway, stay with us, because I want to go. I want to bring in Peter. Peter, you're there on WhatsApp.
Sorry, Joe.
Now, stay with us, Olive.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
And Peter, what did the teacher embed in your head?
Well, I tell you, Joe, I had braces fitted on my teeth in 1968 when I was 10 years of age.
Okay.
Top and bottom up in the dental hospital in Dublin.
Yeah.
And prior to this, I had got several beatings, like most of my classmates. But anyway, I got them fitted on a Monday. And I came into school on a Tuesday, and the master asked me a question, and the pain of the bloody braces, and it was drooling and dribbling. He thought I was eating a sweet. And I can still see to this day, 56 years later, running at me. And I thought he was going to hit me a box on the shoulder, but he hit me a box straight into the mouth. And bursted my gums, broke the braces, and a mouthful of blood came out on the floor. And
what
that
age
was the situation.
What age were you again, Peter?
I was 10. 10 years of age. And he was a brute. And listen to Olive there, like, you know what I mean? She summed it up perfectly all down through the years, what it was like. But and I remember.
And did when you?
I was,
yeah, you must have. Now, in Olive's case, remember, she was able to hide the embedded teeth were in her head, but they were hidden by her hair. So she went home with it. What did you tell your parents?
My mother had just passed away prior to this, so when I was brought home, but like all of with her teeth of the comb in her head, I was lucky to have the teeth left in my mouth. But I was brought home, and my dad used to work very early in the morning, and when he discovered what had happened, he waited until the end of school time, and he brought me up the road and into the classroom where the master was still there, the kids, everybody was gone home at this stage, and he grabbed him by the throat, and I thought he was going to kill him. And he pushed him up against the wall, and he urinated on the floor, the teacher did. Jesus. And when he seen this happen, he dropped him, and we came home.
And your father was recently widowed, am I hearing that as well?
That's
your
right,
mother
he was, within a couple of months. But I remember having to go back up to the dental hospital.
Of course,
we travelled by bus that time. And I went into the dental hospital and used to have to go up once a month to get him adjusted. But when I went up, I opened my mouth and the dental surgeon, where are your teeth? Where's your braces? And I had him in the hanky and she hit me. Oh, God almighty, she hit me. But when I told her the story, she was very sympathetic and, you know, and repaired them. And I still have all my teeth to this day, believe it or not, 66 years of age. But those are horrendous times. You know, and
you mean
one of many.
Okay.
You know.
And you mean one of many beatings for you, or one of many beatings for everyone in the class?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. You know, and like listen to Olive there as well. Like the kigura came, the inspectors came, and everybody came and went.
Yeah.
But there was never a question asked of the children how he's getting on.
Yeah.
How he's being treated.
Now, remember, the problem is, Peter, and the problem is, Olive, from what we're hearing last week, I've just given you one story jumps into my head. The Keeley family from Blackditch Road in Ballyferm, the child was beaten black and blue. It threw his overcoat. He came home and had wheels, had marks, bruises on his back. And they went to the Department of Education. They told him to get lost. They sent a letter back saying, go to the school manager. Who was the school manager? The parish priest. Went to the parish priest, Canon Troy, originally from Kerry, ran Ballyferm with a blackthorn stick and more. And Canon Troy interviewed a seven-year-old on his own in his office and concluded... Can you imagine? Now, I was afraid of Canon Troy when I was 15. He was a big, big man and he had this role in Ballyferm. But anyway, a seven-year-old and the Canon Troy, the child ended up crying and Canon Troy decreed that the child, the seven-year-old, was lying. And also, terrible. The family, to their credit, I don't know how they did it in those days, the 1960s, they did go to court. But the court, the judge, probably went to the same private school as the priest. The judge decided that the boy was lying as well. And criticised his parents for being taken in so easily. Anyway, will you stay with us, Olive? Stay with us, Peter, and I'll talk to Derek
okay,
and
Joe, yeah, cheers.
Hear other voices after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Hearing the many stories about the treatment of left-handed kids during their early school days resonated with me as a kiddog. Any time we did handwriting exercises in class, this one teacher would rap my knuckles. This happened also in knitting and sewing class. I still do everything with my left hand, so she didn't win with her savagery. A few days after my daddy's sudden death, there was the annual handwriting competition. I was the favourite to win, and a shiny box of water paints was the prize. I was thrilled to win the coveted prize, but to claim my prize, I had to prove the entry was really mine. So I was made sign my name on a sheet of paper. A hushed conversation ensued, and I was told I hadn't won because I was a kiddog. I think that devastated me more than poor daddy's death. To this day, I can see them deliberating and the then parish priest delivering the decision in front of all the parents.
It's true when they say that teachers can shape you. But in my case, it was a negative shape, and I went through years of hell in primary school back in the 70s. There's not a day that passes that I do not think of certain memories. We had a teacher who on occasions got us to line up to kiss her. She also would dress us in girls' clothes as punishment. She took a lot from me, but I think the most was my spirit. I was a happy child who thought the world was a good place, but quickly believed that this was normal. She took a spark from me and a lot of kids. In my mind's eyes, I can still see five so-called bold lads, including me, that would be dressed in girls' clothes for punishment and placed in a pram. She pretended she would take us through the town in a pram. She didn't. But the sheer terror was incredible.
Derek, good afternoon. Derek is contacting us from Germany. Derek, you use a phrase to describe your school. Olive and Peter are still with us. Go ahead, Derek, please.
Yeah, it's just a dignity-stripping experience for a number of years. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, yeah.
So, I won't mention any names, but we were over in Dublin 7, on the north side of Dublin, and there was people there from all around the Dublin 7 area, and we were generally a small people, but the teachers spent all their time every day trying to make us smaller, as small as possible. And they used every tactic they could, leather straps, beating, humiliation. And there was even one teacher there who used to pick out small boys, and he would put them on his lap, the smallest and most vulnerable of the class. And he would be sitting up the front in front of 30 or 40 boys, and within 5 or 10 minutes, his hand would be down in the underwear of the child and,
abusing the child.
Abusing the child in front of 30 or 40 people. But, we were learning to submit to all authority there, and you couldn't raise your voice. You couldn't, punishment. And particularly the religious class and the Irish class. They were Gael goers or whatever, but they had a nationalist agenda to hate English, or it seemed to me, to beat the Irish into us. And also with religious class, they had God on their side, and they really wanted to, lift us up by the ears. We had one teacher who used to pick students up by lifting them by the ears, and they were always armed with leather straps and rulers, and bringing a child out in front of the class and roaring at them until they got tears flowing. And if you resisted, if you had some defiance in you, that was a challenge to the teacher to get worse and to bring it on you, and so the older kids, they became as defiant as you could imagine, a lot of them. And they really encouraged a culture of, let's say, sexism and homophobia. Yeah. Everybody was, you see, until they...
Tolerance of violence and physical abuse. Derek, stay with us, because I want you to tell us the story of the bomb scare, what it meant, but I need to get you onto a better line. So stay there for a sec. Derek's in Germany. Mary is in Wexford. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you, Mary? You say, I can still hear those sounds.
Yes. I can hear the sounds. I'm talking about a national school, Joe, back in the 50s and 60s. Yeah. Can you hear me okay there?
Yeah, and you would have been 6, 7, 8, 9, a child.
Yes, exactly. Yes, personally, I wasn't a victim too much. Just one particular day when we had a trip to the dentist, and back in the day, which was a very good service, we had a trip to a dentist, the minibus came and collected us.
Okay.
That morning, the teacher had asked me an addition of, I don't know, 32 and 64 or whatever.
Yeah.
I knew the answer, but because I wasn't quick enough, he pulled me by the hair, struck my head off the desk. I had a horrendous headache and dreaded going to the dentist that afternoon. However, I wasn't the worst victim. Some of the boys, especially boys, who were unable either to answer quickly enough or give the wrong answer, he took off their shirts and dumped them into a heap of letters. They were from the desktop. From the waist up. And I was sitting behind two particular boys who were lovely lads. With one, I walked to school every day on a country road, 2.5 miles from the national school. And they were sitting in front of me. They were asked some question to which they were unable to respond.
Yeah.
And the teacher came down, took their two heads, banged them together. Yeah. I can still remember the cracking sound of their heads.
The cracking sound of the two heads being banged together.
For no reason whatsoever. I mean, simply because, you know,
And stripping, we'll try, and your line is gone as well, unfortunately, Mary and Wexford. The stripping of the shorts, and the shorts of the boys were thrown into the nettles.
Yes.
And I presumed...
boys were thrown into the nettles, Joe.
Okay. The boys were thrown into the nettles.
Yes, so they were
thrown. Sorry. He stripped the shorts off the boys and threw them being the boys, into bunches of nettles, and they were bare-chested because they couldn't answer quickly enough to him.
And the strange thing is, this was a very good teacher, but because he had a short fuse and a very bad temper, he probably expected every student to be as good and as rapid as he was.
Yeah, but... You know, we're not. This wasn't 7-year-olds teaching 7-year-olds. This was people. And I want to go back to Olive and ask her that question. Stay with us, Mary, and I'll go back to Derek in a sec. Olive, when your teacher said to you when you confronted her over what she did to your head and you still had the plastic teeth still inside your skull or your cranium, when she said to you, we didn't know what we were doing, what age was she when she was doing that to you?
Oh, she probably at that stage had been in her late 20s, early 30s.
So she wasn't...
She was a qualified teacher, Joe. I mean, she wasn't a teenager.
And what did she mean, Olive, I didn't know what I was doing?
It was that they didn't know what they were doing. I think her comment was in relation to the Department of Education leaving them stranded in rural areas with no idea what they were doing. That's how I picked it up. You know, that they were left with us in, you know, I mean, there's no doubt that from my own point of view, these people were not monsters. They were trying to do a job in a rural area. But the point I'm making is we were traumatized by the whole class being made, and both of your callers have touched on it, the whole class being made to watch this and watch it in silence and not pipe up, because if you piped up you'd be added to the
list,
you know. And how many, and I'm sure Peter could come back on this as well, many of our friends that went through that regime suffered from anxiety, had dependence on alcohol, had mental health problems.
Yeah.
That were never fulfilled their potential because they were told they were a waste of space and they weren't, you know, they'd never amount to anything.
You're only good enough for the boat. Wasn't that something that was said the other day? The cattle boat to England.
Well, I mean, one of the things that always amazed me was that nobody took notice of the fact that regularly girls would come to school and say, they'd be asked, where's your sister? And they'd say, she had to mind the house.
Yeah.
Now, what they meant by that was that either their mother was pregnant or their mother had to go away and she had to look after younger children and had to look after men working on the farm and so on. But there was no allowance made for anyone like that. Mm. Like, they'd throw their eyes up to heaven if you had to mind the house or he had to work on the farm or there'd be reasons why they were needed at home.
But I wanted to...
We were traumatised. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
We were traumatised being made watch these people being beaten.
Now, Olive, to go back to the teacher, because I'm surprised in one sense that we haven't had, I know it's of an age and all that kind of, but that we haven't had many teachers come on, or then they'd be well retired at this stage, to say what you've just said, to say these were the times, and you confronting your teacher who embedded that hairband into your head, part of which is still there 60 years later. She said to you, but she had been through teacher training college.
Yeah, but you have to factor in that these people were gods. These people were venerated, like they were held in such esteem.
Yeah, but just because they were gods, Olive, didn't allow them to become Satans. Didn't allow them to become sadists.
But you nobody knew they were sadists. Because none of us would go home. That's what, I mean, I can understand.
Yeah.
And fair play to Peter's father. Because it never happened to him again. But supposing you didn't have a father, and that was one of the things too, that children were targeted and not targeted, that's not the right word, but there were children who weren't like me and didn't have two parents, you know, who dropped them off to school from time to time, who were visible, who were known, and had great respect for the educational system. And all my mother wanted was, as I said, if my head was cut off, it would be put in my lunchbox and I'd be put out the door to school. Because I wasn't missing my education for anything because...
Olive, she
put such value by education.
Another thing you said earlier, Olive, was the Angelus. The best are the Angelus.
Oh, don't talk to me about that.
Well... You see, there's two things. Again, we're getting such a deluge. One thing I know is somebody said, get rid of the Angelus on RT Radio. And I know the argument normally made is because it's denominational.
Yeah.
And then the argument made in favour of keeping it is that it has lost that denominational sectarian, you know, belonged to one church.
Yeah.
And it's a period of reflection. But I remember the man said last week who had been abused, the Angelus bell reminds me of the abuse. So I'm kind of, is it the Angelus or does the Angelus bell affect you when you hear it? Remember, you hear it.
No.
Okay.
No, the Angelus is three sets of prayers followed. You know, there's three sets of prayers followed by a longer prayer.
Yeah.
And I always got them in the wrong order.
Okay. And the other thing, Olive, I know was in some of the emails saying, again, it never struck me, but given all the people are just totally understandably reaching out to see how they can, reaching out and speaking, I think it is helping, and it's helping others, definitely, and the feedback we get is that it's helping the callers also. But someone said, get rid of the papal cross in the Phoenix Park. It is a sign of power, it is a sign of... And I drove by it the other day. It is some structure. But anyway, I'm moving off with the Angelus and the...
Well, what I would like to get rid of, I would like to say to people is, get rid of the fear of them doing it again. Because they can't touch you. And You're paralysed by the fear of what happened. You were traumatised by being made to stand there and wait for it to be your turn. And I can't describe the blood leaving your system as you waited for your turn to see what would you be asked and would you be able to answer it. And you'd be trying to whisper to your pal because you'd see the terror on their face. And that's what I'm saying about I did not get an education. Yeah. I got an experience. Now, it stood me in good stead because I developed a great sense of social justice out of it and a great sense of right and wrong.
You developed a great sense of social justice and a sense of right and wrong, not out of it, despite it. What you were taught, sorry, what happened, as you say, not an education, it was an experience, but your experience in primary school, as with a lot of our age group that we're listening to over the last two weeks, was more crying than laughter. More crying than stay with us, Olive. 51551 Joe with RT.ie. Derek is back. Derek, the bomb scare story, what happened?
Yeah, it was the early 70s, around the time of the Talbot Street bombing. I was 8 or 9 years old. And, the army and the police were called, and the kids were all shepherded over to the basketball courts about 50 or 60 metres away. And this chap came along dressed like the Michelin Man in combat green clothes. He had a little robot, I think it was, a camera on wheels, investigating a box.
Yeah.
That had been left next to the school. And we were all waiting, watching the shenanigans with bated breath. But in my mind, whoever had planted that device was trying to help us, was trying to liberate us, was trying to do us a favor. I had no idea, like I was a kid, of what was happening in the background. But
explain that to me. Why did you think they were trying to do you a favor? To get your day off or to blow up the school?
Blow that school into space. Oh. In my mind, it was like informed by the Looney Tune cartoons. That was our daily education on television. But I could see that school puncturing a cloud, still architecturally intact, on its way into space, leaving orbit. And I thought, whoever planted that device was trying to save the kids from that dignity-stripping daily experience of going to school, being insulted, being beaten, and being made feel small.
I thought that was an incredible line you used at the beginning. We were small, but we were made feel smaller. Yeah. Little babies, 6, 7, 8 years of age.
And I'd like to absolutely add my support to that triumphalist cross put in the Phoenix Park should never have been put there. This is at a time when all the horrors and all the single mothers were having their children robbed from them and trafficked by the Catholic Church. Trafficked. Some people use the word adopted.
Yeah, no, that whole
they were trafficked
to America, the cross went up at the Phoenix Park, and if you were in Dublin 7, you were near the Phoenix Park. The cross went up in 79, and it's still there. You're right; it dominates the skyline. This big,
it's a triumphalist, and near that cross there is a cairn, 3,000 years old, that people are buried, prehistoric people that were in the Phoenix Park over 1,000 years before Christianity was invented. People in the Phoenix Park.
You want to see that cross removed. You want to see that cross removed.
I'd like to see it removed. I'd love to see it removed.
Because a lot
I'd like to start, that would be... the Vatican and Christianity, Derek, I think
that was only given temporary planning permission, and then... they gave it permanent planning permission or whatever, but I take your point. that it's since 79 when the Pope John Paul and Michael Cleary and Bishop Eamon Casey, say no more, stood on the altar together, primarily in Galway, but also in Dublin. A lot has happened and a lot has been revealed about the work of the Catholic Church. Okay, Derek.
But they had the insider knowledge. They knew what was happening in the background when they put that up there. So this was like a slap in the face to justice.
Yeah. And we had a when they started here a few weeks ago,
this
campaign to get the remains or to ask the church to remove the remains of Bishop Eamon Casey from its exalted position in the marble and mahogany crypt in Galway Cathedral. Okay.
Joe, they could have put a little stone cross there or a Celtic cross and given some job to the Mason's something that had continuity with Irish tradition.
Yeah,
but now they put up a big
It just looks like two big RSJs crossing each other. It's awful. Apart from
the legend. Okay.
I know it's a symbol. Yeah, I know it's a symbol of people. Okay, Olive, I will come back to you. Derek, thanks. And I'm going to Edie and George and others. But stay with us after this break. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, Derek remembered 1974, as we all do, the Dublin bombings. But in 1975, St. Patrick's Teacher Training College in Dublin marked its centenary. It had been established in 1875. So most of the teachers, not the religious obviously, but most of the teachers we're talking about have been through St. Patrick's College. Still there as part of DCU now. And I just wonder, looking back at the history, has anyone written a history? What were teachers taught about corporal punishment? And how did it get, how did it go so much out of control? Where in a classroom, and by the way, they used to call them pretty barren enough classrooms, but in the classroom, they could find 60, I've counted them so far, 60 different ways of beating children, of punishing children. Like, did anyone hear the one yesterday of being made kneel on 250p pieces for hours on end, for days on end? We're made kneel on them. Can you imagine the pain? The crucifix in the Phoenix Park. Edward, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
You got a crucifix in your mouth.
Yes, that's right. Joe, what happened was we were being taught for our Holy Communion.
Yeah.
And whenever we were being taught, there were about 12 of us around the table. And I was on my desk because there was no room around the table.
Okay.
And she came around with a ruler, an old ruler, put the ruler into everybody's mouth. She pretended she was a priest. And she put the ruler into your mouth. And it went down almost to my tonsils. And I was sick, Joe.
Yeah, of course.
There was no cleanliness or nothing on the ruler. It never was clean. It just took out of one mouth and into another mouth. And then after that, Joe, I got sick. And I vomited on the floor. And she made me clean it up.
Yeah.
And said to me, you will have to tell that at your first confession that you destroyed the floor. Destroyed the floor with your vomit.
Yeah.
And make sure you tell the priest. If you don't tell that, he put a spell on you. And I was only less than seven, Joe, and I was worried about that spell from a priest because the Catholic Church parents and everybody else would more or less tell you that the priest had great power. And I was told if I didn't tell that at that confession, I would be like a statue, and I would be like just not able to move for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to the priest to hear my first confession, and the first words I said to him, Joe, was, please don't put a spell on me, because I thought that I would be. He put a spell on me, but the priest was nice. He said that won't happen. But my teacher had me thinking, worrying about 2 weeks or so before my confession that this would happen to me. And not alone that, Joe, I was battered because I was sick. And as well as that, Joe, the same teacher would say to you, if you were a day a week, this was back in the 60s. And when there was we had a walk about 3 miles to the school, and if it was a very stormy day, my parents would keep me off school.
Yeah.
But when you were in the next day, you were asked why you weren't at school, and if you said you were sick, she would say to you, "Was the priest and doctor with ye? Did you receive the last rites? Were you anointed?" And if your answer was no, you were battered, Joe. Battered on the head. She took me around when I was at my first Holy Communion teaching me. She battered me because I didn't know all the things about Holy Communion. I didn't know all my catechism, in other words. And she caught me by the hair on the head, top of my forehead, and she just battered me down on the ink desk with one hand, and the other hand she used was her knuckles against my side and almost breaking my ribs, Joe. My ribs were sore afterwards, yeah. And your head would be sore, and you'd be kind of in disarray. You don't know what was happening to you, but you witnessed that punishment all the time. That was from one of the female teachers, Joe. But I remember, we were always made feel, there's always discrimination from this female teacher, because if you attended school for the full week, she would give you a sweet. She could, on a Friday, you get one sweet if you attended school full time for the week.
Yeah.
But if you missed the day, which we did now and again, because we lived far away from the school, yeah. And that she would give a sweet to the person beside you who attended, but you had to, you could no sweet. You just say, that's the payday, and you didn't come all along every day to the school, which you should have done, so that's your punishment, you could no sweet. And I remember one day walking home, Joe, from the school, and it was the snow, mm-hmm. And we had to walk for 3 miles up a hill, and I remember going to the shop, asking the shopkeeper, could I have a sweet? And the woman in question, she said, who told you to go into the shop? I said, my mum, I lied to her. I said, my mum said you were to give me a sweet. And she said, maybe your mum didn't say it, but the shopkeeper didn't give me a sweet either. So I remember going home traumatized. And I used to wish, Joe, that a car would come along and kill me and my brother, and we wouldn't have to go back to that punishment at the school the next morning. I used to wake up in the morning thinking, have I to go through this punishment? But we all got it, Joe. We all got that punishment. Mm-hmm. And
Edward,
another teacher...
Edward, what age were you when yourself...
I was less than seven, Joe.
And you were wishing a car?
Yes, I was wishing a car. There wasn't many cars on the road time, Joe. But I was wishing a car would come along the road. It was a narrow road. And a car would come along, and my brother got the same abuse as me almost. But I would wish the car would come along and kill me, Joe. And I was only seven, I knew that. I knew if I was away from the scene, I wouldn't have to go through this abuse all the time. And then when we moved into the master's class, we were abused as well. We were told, Joe, that we were that stupid and that ignorant. We wouldn't even get the dole because we wouldn't be able to sign the forms.
Yeah.
And we got battered. He sent you down to the cloakroom, but he didn't call it a cloakroom, Joe. He called it the slaughterhouse. And when to a seven-year-old child, a slaughterhouse meant killing. I knew that. It was
really
something. And we were almost killed, Joe. He used to come along the hallway. You'd hear him coming, and he would start singing Republican songs like "Who Fears to Speak" of 98. And you knew he was coming. And then when he came into the classroom, we would be kind of rubbing our hands on the wall, Joe, to make them kind of ready for it to get slapped and get a battery.
Oh, God.
Not only got on the hands, you got on the knees, the legs, and on the shoulder and the head and everywhere.
Poor thing. Eddie.
We were punished badly, Joe.
Okay.
And he used to say to the, there were some Protestants at our school as well, and he used to tell them to get out of the road because you're for hell.
Good God.
And I was talking to one of them girls just about 2 days ago. He said the Protestants were for hell and they shouldn't hear the Catholic prayers, so they were sent outside.
Oh, and Eddie just
and that was including the Our Father, Joe. He said they shouldn't be hearing those prayers.
And
the Our Father is for everyone.
What happened with the crucifix?
Oh, she took the crucifix down and shoved it in my throat. She said I was evil.
Stay there. Stay there, Eddie, because Suzanne is with us as well. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number, or you can post live line RT Radio Dublin 4. Suzanne.
Yes, hi Joe.
The crucifix,
yeah. Well, I made my first Holy Communion in first year, back in the 70s, it was in first year, so first class, so you were seven.
Yeah.
And at the time, the school was built, but the church was still prefab.
Mm-hmm.
And I clearly remember we used to have to walk across the road and do our communion preparation over in the church, which is really a prefab.
Mm-hmm.
And this female teacher, she was a witch, she used to beat us, but in preparation for our communion, she lined us up and we had to stick out our tongues and she did role play. She was the priest.
Yeah.
And she would come along with this crucifix and we had to stick out our tongue and she would place the crucifix top and bottom, back and front, on to our tongue. And as she said it, she said, "Body of Christ." And you'd be getting sick because she never wiped it. There was no hygiene.
I was going to say that.
You wouldn't dare.
There'd be a bit of metal on the crucifix, a bit of dirty wood by the time it got around the whole...
Even to this day, a metally taste in my mouth makes me feel sick.
The dado rail.
Oh, yeah, the dado rail. Yeah, she had a dado rail. It looked very long to us. I'd say it was probably like a meter stick. And it had carving on it. So it was a decorative dado rail. And when you put your hand out to be slapped, the palm of your hand, she would hit you so hard that you'd be left with the pattern of the dado rail on your hand.
And you met someone recently in a bank.
I did. I met a girl in the bank and she didn't recognise me. She didn't know me from Adam, but I just knew her face. I mean, obviously, it's a long, long time ago. And I said where I went to school and whatever. And the first words out of her mouth was the teacher's name. And she was shaken. And she said, "That woman." She says, "That woman." I said, "I know. I remember the dado rail." And she said, "She's a lot to answer
for." So this woman, what would this be, 50 or 60 years later, this woman's shook at the mention of that teacher's name?
So it would be 50 years later,
Okay, Suzanne, more voices.
I really don't know where to start. I went to a rural national school in the early 60s. There are no nuns or brothers in my story, but it made no difference. You still got battered. I had the same teacher for 3 years, as was the norm back then. Again, like a lot of rural villages, there was only one shop, but it sold everything. It is here she bought the walking stick with the little rungs on it that she beat me and the other children with. During the rehearsal for our upcoming Holy Communion Mass, she gave us all a little bit of an ice cream wafer. I was told I held my tongue out the wrong way and was whacked for that. 10 of the best to a child of only 6.5 years old. I really can't remember any day not being beaten. Any excuse and you got it. When my father died back in the late 60s, this teacher wrote to my mother to say she would look out for us kids, her children. But the beatings only got worse after that. I come from a very large family and none of us have any happy memories. The eldest started school in 1945 and one of the last of my siblings would have finished in 1973. We were all beaten with straps, bamboo canes and a walking stick.
After 50 years I can talk now, thanks to all the recent revelations about the terror in Irish primary schools. Religious orders, lay teachers, adults who picked on the most vulnerable students, beatings and humiliations on a daily basis. I can never understand why anyone raises a hand to a child. I was always afraid in school and study has always been a source of anxiety for me. I became a priest and I hope that in 40 years I have been gentle and kind to adults and children wherever I have ministered. I don't know what kind of a country I grew up in. It is heartbreaking to hear the stories of cruelty and violence in schools that were supposed to be Christian. I feel ashamed of what people, lay and religious, did to children in schools. So many of them have avoided accountability. Sadists and monsters.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I was at school in the 60s and 70s, and to this day, when I pass my school on my early morning walk, I get a massive feeling of dread. That feeling of fear in the pit of your stomach, it's never left me. Not all the nuns were horrible, of course, but many were. I have had renal problems all my life, which I put down to not being allowed to go to the toilet when I need it. In my childlike innocence, I once said to my mother that nuns don't have bums. When she asked, what? Why are you saying that? Don't be silly. I answered, well, they won't let you go to the toilet, so they must never have to go to the toilet.
Back in the late 50s to mid 60s, I attended a religious-run school. I was psychologically terrorised by a brother at the age of 8. I only had him once a week, but I was so afraid of him that I couldn't think. One day we were doing maths. We were doing tens and units. He put the number 16 on the blackboard and he asked me which was the bigger number. I would say 6 to the laughter of the other boys. They were just happy that it wasn't them. I really was so afraid of him that I could not think. On one occasion, word got around the yard that he had a new cane. God, was I relieved when he arrived to class without it. About 15 minutes into the class, he walked down my aisle, turned around and then walked past me again. Then out from underneath his black soutane, he produced the cane and slapped me for God knows what. Another time, and I still recall the terror I felt, when he lifted my jumper and unbuttoned one of the buttons on my braces at the front, both left and right. He then went around to the back and did the same. Then he stopped. He told me to return to my seat. It was terrifying. I was only 8. I have suffered PTSD since, having been triggered by old photos from then. I cried for a full week on and off, reliving the trauma of inflicting such terror on an 8-year-old.
Edie is in Birmingham. Edie, you don't know. You say, looking back on your childhood in Ireland, whether it was a dream or a nightmare.
Yes, hello, Joe.
Yeah. What are your memories?
Well, my memories, it wasn't only in school, it was in hospital.
Okay.
Of being beaten. I was in hospital, I was 10 years of age, and I had burst appendix, which at that time, it was serious.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I hated visiting hours because I was afraid of my brother and sister sitting on the bed, and they would toss the bed, and then when they would go, I would get beaten because they had tossed the bed. And also, I remember it was called, it was St. Kevin's Den.
Yeah.
I was in a ward on my own because I was really seriously ill. And at the side of the ward, it was the kitchen and a cum office where all the nuns used to gather.
Yeah.
And there was this girl, at the time they were called Mays, and she was always singing, and I never heard a song before, and I've never heard it again, but I know the song. It was always, "Hey there, you with your nose in the air, love never made a fool of you." And one of the nuns thought that she was singing this for her, to annoy her.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if it was a mop or a broom, and she beat her with the broom. And the girl was screaming, and she ran out, and she'd never come back again. And another time, this was about 2 days after my operation, and my stomach was all plastered, and I was bent up, and there was a burst pipe. I don't know if it was in the laundry or if it was in the basement, but I know all of us there was a ward at the back of me, but I was the youngest, and all the women from the ward and me was taken down, and we had to get the dirty sheets and trod on them to dry up the wet.
And you were in hospital, Edie.
And I was in hospital.
It's now St. James or St. Kevin's. Yes,
yes, St. James is now. And I was in there for 10 weeks. And I remember all the time, it was porridge every morning and an egg on Friday. I would never have the porridge because I was afraid it would drip. Because if it dripped on the bedclothes, I'd get a beating. Pulled up by my hair, pushed back down again, slapped on the face. And this was after having major surgery, as it was then.
Yeah.
And then I had to go into convalescent because I wasn't getting any better. But I wasn't getting any better because I couldn't eat because I was afraid of the crumbs getting on the bed. And I went into convalescent. And when you were in convalescent, you were allowed to walk the grounds.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Sometimes I think, was this a nightmare or did it really happen? But I'm sure it really happened. When you walked into St. Kevin's Den, on the right-hand side, there was this building and had all small windows. And I befriended a girl in there. And we went in there one day. And it was filthy. patients were filthy. Yeah. The bed, the headboard was rusted. They were screaming, all the patients, and kicking. I often wondered what that building was, and was it a nightmare? Because I remember I got sick, and we were both crying outside. And that memory is always with me of that place when you walk in, that building, and the small windows. Yeah. And I know that was there. Now I think, what was going on in there? Or was it a nightmare I had?
And then school, Edie.
And then school. Well, school, before we moved to Ballyfermot, we lived in town. Mm. And my dad wrote on the chimney breast the alphabet.
Okay.
And every day, I know before I went to school, when I was at school in low babies and high babies,
yeah.
I could read and I could spell. Brilliant. Because of my dad writing this alphabet. And, you know, A is for apple, A is for airplane. And he used to say, whatever word you get a Cleves of toffee.
Yeah.
And, and the first 2 years, I was really excelling. And I was only in low babies, then on to high babies, but we had the same teacher. But then from there, from when I went to whatever class you go into next, everything changed. Up to today, I am not a good speller. And where I worked, I did work in a school eventually, and the headmaster used to always come to me, Edie, we've got funding, there's a job for special needs that we'd like you to do. There was a job for a classroom assistant we'd like you to do. But, Joe, I couldn't spell, so I couldn't take these jobs. And if I did have to go on exams in the job that I did have, but I always used to say, I never wore glasses. I used to say to the examiner, oh, I forgot my glasses. Could I have someone to read the questions to me?
And what about the time you came back from London?
The time, oh yes. The teacher went around this morning and she says, well, it was a horrible day. I remember going in and my gym slip had shrunk in the wash.
Okay.
And when I went into school, it was a pen and inkwell, so we used blotting paper.
Uh-huh.
And she, because my gym slip had shrunk,
she
pinned it around, pinned the old blotting paper that we all had used around my gym slip.
Oh.
And then it was May time, and that was their ladies' month.
Yeah.
So they asked for flowers to be brought in. But my mum said, well, she had these two long blue candles. She said, instead of flowers, she said, everybody will be bringing in flowers. You take in the candles. Well, Joe, I'll tell you one thing. I wish I'd have never brought in the candles because I got my legs beaten with them that same day. And you know when they broke the wick, and that was making it worse because the candle part was held onto the wick and it just got bashed around my legs.
The sting of it, yeah. And you were beaten because you said your family had gone to London and the nun said that was a pagan town.
Good God. She went around asking all the questions, where had they been? And like they were from their parents, it was probably from another part. Oh, I've been to Clare. And I said, I went to London with my grandmother. I should come and she got me, dragged me by the cheeks, bashed me against the wall. You went to a pagan country. How dare you go to a pagan country? And everything that come out of her mouth, it was
Edie, you were a brilliant, brilliant person. Do you know that? I can hear the strength in your voice. You're such a wonderful pair. I hope you know that.
Thank you.
To have gone through, and now everyone else has gone through all of this, to come through with such strength and such fluency and such ability to communicate what happened to you. And also such gentleness, Edie. I know, I don't know anything about you, Edie, but I'm sure the people around you love you because I can sense, even in the 7 or 8 minutes you've been talking, you're a great, great person.
Thank you.
Great person.
Why did we not tell Joe?
I know.
Because I had a father and I had a grandmother that I could tell anything to. I had a very happy child life, home life.
Yeah.
Why? Why did we not tell?
I know.
Why?
Yeah.
You know, and we used to talk about in front of our friends, you know, what happened to us.
Yeah.
But why did we not tell? I'm 77 years of age now, and I often think, why? Why didn't we tell?
Okay. Just leave it at that, Edie.
Okay.
That is the question that's hanging on so many people's lips. Go gently now this afternoon. Do you hear me?
Okay, well, thank you, Joe.
Look after yourself and give your... Thank you. Anyone that's around you, I don't know anything about your family, friends, anyone that's around you is blessed to have your company. Thank you, Edie. Bye-bye. Talk to you. Edie is in Birmingham now. That's where she lives, in West Midlands. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I was 4 years of age and I had a female teacher. I have no idea what I did, but I was sent to be disciplined by a male teacher. I knocked on the door of his class. He didn't hear my little knock, so I was instructed to knock harder. I recall not being tall enough to even see through the glass in the door. When he answered the door, he whipped me with his cane. I wet myself on the spot. When I returned to my classroom, I was made to put newspaper in my pants and stood facing a wall all day. By the time I was in fifth and sixth class, we were taught by the male teacher, the same one. He would punch and hit the boys in the class and froth would come out of his mouth while he was doing it. I left school when I was 13, so I made sure my children would be educated.
My memory is the smell of BO, tobacco, and the remnants of meals which stained his soutane. I recall his tousled hair from the frenzy of the punishment. One boy had his arm broken. That was primary school. Secondary school was a mix of lay and clerical teachers who used bamboo canes viciously. We used to dread getting the results of the house exams, as teachers would administer punishment if the results were not up to scratch. Six of the best was the usual, and the teacher would have to catch his breath after.
I went to national school in South County Dublin. I began school age 3 and had the same teacher for a number of years. If we stood up, we'd be tied to our chairs with garden twine so you couldn't move. She'd make sure it was tightly crisscrossed. She'd put masking tape over our mouths if we talked. She'd beat us with a garden cane. I still remember the puddles of wee under the chair.
Sean De Bruin is in Limerick. Sean, I really appreciate your call. When were you in teacher training college, Sean?
Yes, 73 to 75 in St. Patrick's College in Drumcondra, Joe.
And at that stage, it would have been 75, it would have been celebrating its centenary. So it's been there a long, long time. But Sean, what, if anything, was taught in teacher training college about punishment, physical punishment?
Actually, from my experience, it was never mentioned in college, and it was never mentioned. People were never told to engage in corporal punishment. We were told to motivate children, to simply to give them confidence. And absolutely, there was none of that. And it's horrendous, the stories you've related there over the last week or so, Joe. It's hard to believe that human nature hasn't changed that much, you'd imagine. It was so perverted. And what's really worrying me is that there were these teachers who we've heard about them. They probably had children themselves. Would they want their children treated like that? It's absolutely baffling. And we have to believe every single story that you've heard, Joe. And I think the single most important thing in going to school is simply giving confidence to children. Yeah, and that's what I say, work in teacher education, to give them confidence. They've probably forgotten much of what you've taught, but children will never forget how you treated them. And if you break a child's confidence, you'll never regain that.
As we heard so often this past 2 weeks. But Sean, were you told what you could not do, punishment-wise?
Not really, no, except that you were expected to teach the children. After my experience in St. Pat's in Drumcondra, you were taught to teach the children as best you could, to motivate them. And children have different abilities. All children are not as academic. And as we know, the primary school and second level curricula are quite academic. There are lots of people who have fantastic talents where they really don't get the opportunity to flourish in schools. And we were always advised simply to motivate children and get them to reach their potential, no matter what it was.
And, you're still involved in education, which is brilliant, and you're now involved in another teacher training college, which is also there, a long time Mary Immaculate College in Limerick. Does, insofar as you know, on the curriculum now in teacher training colleges, is the whole issue of never raise your hand as an adult to, never raise your hand, full stop, never raise your hand to a child? Is that?
Not only should not, absolutely, not only should not raise your hand, you should not even raise your voice. Because also you can do a lot of damage as well, verbally.
Okay.
I think the challenge for us today is teacher educators to make sure what we're doing today and what we're advising our student teachers to do, that they don't go back in 50 and say, why did you do that? Okay. I think that's the big challenge for us.
Okay, well today. Said. Good to meet you, Margaret. Sean De Bruin is in Limerick. A researcher, Richie Byrne, Owen McLaughlin produced. And Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.